3-2 Sharks. Hurdle wins the draw. Podolski clear. And game seven belongs to San Jose. It'll be the Sharks and the St. Louis Blues in the Western Conference Final. The final score in game seven. San Jose 3 and Colorado 2.
The Avs lose in game seven to end their season. NHL playoffs last night in San Jose. 3-2 was the final, but not without controversy. Avalanche thought they had tied it at 2-2 after a lengthy review decided that Landeskog was offsides, and it was a call that was called for to be reviewed, and there is a delay of game penalty if the call doesn't end up going your way, if you challenge it, basically. And Peter DeBoer, the head coach of the Sharks, talks about that controversial call.
Tough call, because if you're wrong, it's a penalty. But it was a game-changing call, and we've had those go against us this year at different points. It was a huge call and a gutsy call by a video coach, Dan Darrow, who gets big props for that.
So in the second period, the Avs thought they had tied it 2-2. Instead, goal doesn't count. 2-1, taken off the board. Sharks then go up 3-1, and that was a major change in the ball game. Sharks win 4-3. Winning last night 3-2, so the conference finals are set. It'll be the Hurricanes of Carolina versus the Boston Bruins tonight, game one on NBC Sport Television at 7 o'clock, and then the Blues versus the Sharks in the West in conference finals. The Blues, of course, winning in seven as well over Dallas, and the Sharks winning game seven last night over the Avs. That'll be game one tomorrow, on Saturday, not tomorrow, but on Saturday, as everybody will have the day off tomorrow. Local sports information, and we have some breaking news, which we broke yesterday, and Dusty's been on top of this story in regards to why there is an opening. Of course, we were all over the situation with Coach Grasine not having his contract renewed at St. John's, and now we at least know one of the positions that Coach Grasine had has now been filled.
Yes, Dean Gengler yesterday was named the new head coach for the football team at St. John's Tipton, so that's the position that's been filled. The hiring was made official yesterday afternoon there at St. John's. Dean's a 1985 graduate of St. John's Catholic High School, so familiar with the school and the area, obviously, and he spent last season as an assistant coach with the Blue Jays, so he knows the players on the team and will be familiar with that. He has the one other high school assistant coaching position that he's had, and that was from 1990 to 92 at Campus High School down in Hayesville by Wichita. So that's the only experience he's got as far as the varsity football level is concerned, but he is very familiar with the sport. He played from 1985 to 1990 at Fort Hays State. It was kind of fun talking with him off air yesterday, talking about like some of the coaches that were there when he was there were Mike McCarthy and Randy Dreiling, and those are guys that have had a lot of success in the coaching realm. Obviously, Mike McCarthy was the coach for the Green Bay Packers by the end of his, or at his pinnacle anyway. So, and I think Randy Dreiling, people would know who has coached a lot of state champions in this state high school and in the 5A and 6A level. So he takes a lot that he learned from those guys as well and brings to the table. So Dean Gengler, the new head coach for the St. John's Tipton football team, and we're looking forward to working with him and seeing what he can do with the Blue Jay program from here on.
All right, you want to segue in your interview? Or
I didn't know if you wanted to go right to it or if you wanted to add anything to that. So
Not really.
Yeah, we will talk with Dean here and get his thoughts on his new position. And welcome back on Katy Country 94, Z96.3 Sports. Dusty Dunn is joined now by the new head coach of the St. John's Tipton Blue Jay football team, Dean Gengler, a very familiar face at St. John's, an assistant coach last year with the Blue Jays football team. First of all, Coach, thanks for taking some time to join us here. How excited are you, and how cool is it for you to be coaching now as a head coach at your alma mater?
Well, thanks for having me on, Dusty. I am excited about it. A lot of times it's hard to tell what you want to be excited about and different things that you're doing, but in this case, I'm really excited with the opportunity that's out there. I think I am a graduate of St. John's, and I'm related to just almost everybody in Tipton. So my mother was from there, so I've got a lot of connections to both schools, and kind of a lifelong commitment on my end, I guess, to the school and trying to give back in some way, and coaching, I think, is something I feel a calling to do. So I'm glad to do it, and looking forward to getting started with it.
we're kind of talking off air about your pedigree, I guess, and your history in coaching and some of those things and what you bring to the table. Just give a little bit of your background in coaching and how you got started and now how you've come back into it.
Yeah, I started, you know, I played basically all plays through high school, then went to Fort Hays, graduated from Fort Hays, and when I left there, I went down to campus high school, Haysville, down in Wichita, a 5A school down there, and it was a couple of years on the, I had the offensive, defensive lines down there for those 2 years, and the varsity staff, and JV, coached some basketball and stuff down there too, so and then from there, kind of went into coaching with my own kids going through more your kind of the Bucks sort of level that we have in Beloit. Did a lot of that as we went back there. I coached 2 years, and then I went to law school. So I was kind of out of coaching for a decent period of time, and then coached my own kids. But as far as getting back into the high school ranks, that was kind of just more last year with assistant coaching at St. John's. Always kind of had a desire to help with that and do what I could with it. And, you know, sometimes opportunities are there and sometimes they're not. So an opportunity has come up here. So I'm kind of getting back into that and hoping I can do a good job with it.
As you look at this team, St. John's Tipton, you're familiar with them. You know these kids because some of your kids have gone to school with them and maybe some of their brothers and sisters and things like that. But as you had a chance to be an assistant coach last year, what do you feel this team's strengths are as you head into it here for the 2019 season?
Well, I think every year can be different just depending what you're trying to emphasize and how you're wanting to do it. But I think what we've got is we've got a good nucleus of kids. We're still, you know, not overly experienced, but we do have good experience out there. And we've got some kids with some size, and we've got some kids with some speed. And I think if you combine kids with some size and kids with some speed and try to get the most that you can out of them at the positions they're in, I think we have a good chance to be really successful. And that'll be a lot of, you know, just how I can get the kids motivated to do what they can do and really motivate them to do the very best they can do at any position they're in. So I look forward to the opportunity. I think we're in good shape for it.
I'm not going to ask you to give away any of your secrets or anything like that, but as a offensive lineman and an all-conference offensive lineman in college as a center, I'm guessing you feel like the game starts with the run and the guys up front, right?
I think it starts. I'll go as far as to say I think it starts with the linemen. I got to hold my lineman stance up there. I was a running back in high school, so I kind of got to walk both sides of the fence too. But I feel like up front is where everything starts. And if you're losing there consistently, you're not going to win very many other spots on the field. Now, 8-man can be, you know, a little more of speed can really get you somewhere in 8-man a little more so than maybe 11-man, but I think you can, and you don't necessarily have to have the size to do it either, but I do think that the your technique and stuff like that, and it, you know, not every kid is going to be, you know, coached to be a college level lineman, but there are techniques and ways of blocking and so on that any kid any size can learn. And I remember back in my high school days, Clifton Clyde, or Clyde back at the time, ran a power offense single wing for years with 150, 160 pound linemen. So I know I know that can be done with different size of kids, but I do believe, you know, the line is where it starts, whether that line is protecting for a pass or whether they're pushing for a run. I think that's where it starts.
Dean Gingler, the new head football coach of the St. John's Tipton Blue Jays. We're going to get into more of the football aspects of it when we get closer to the season starting. But, Dean, thanks for the time. Congratulations on the new job, and we'll look forward to talking with you in the fall, all right?
All right. Thanks, Dusty. Appreciate it.
All right. Dean Gingler, heard it here first. He's the new head football coach at St. John's Tipton. And just your overall thoughts on this. Obviously, a difficult time when Coach Christine was not renewed. A lot of people voiced their frustrations and support of Coach Christine, and many still do, but this is a thing in life. It's hard, but the show must go on, as they
exactly
say. And so now, moving forward, Dean Gingler is a new head coach and obviously has experience with the kids and is tied to the school and has a history, as you pointed out. So just your overall thoughts on the change, and then what about the rest of his staff?
Yeah, the staff will be a little fluid and seeing who's all back next year. I think it tipped in and make sure they've got him renewed. Lance Hollis was an assistant last year, and Dean was the other assistant. So we'll learn more about that as we go along here, and Dean has a chance to put all that together. For me, I kind of echo what you just said. You know, it was tough for a lot of people to see Coach Kersine go. I think there was a lot of support, as we obviously mentioned and talked about on our show here on the Sports Ticket. But at the end of the day, it is a situation where you move on, and you have to, the program has to continue on, and you got to keep rolling. And I think Dean's a guy that can keep it going in the right direction, just based on his experience. Like I said, this is his first head coaching job. At the high school varsity level, but he's got so much experience in the game that it's going to benefit him, and I think could benefit the St. John's Tipton program as well. So I'm looking forward. I've known Dean for about 9 to 10 years here, and have worked with him on various things within the church too. But I'm looking forward to working with Dean here on this and seeing what he can bring to the table for the St. John's Tipton football team. You know, obviously it's going to be a different look because it's a different coach, and there'll be different philosophies, but these kids are going to probably put in the same kind of effort they always have, and if they do that, they'll have success there, I think, at St. John's Tipton.
Well, if you missed that whole story or missed the audio or anything tied to that story, you want to go back, you can listen and read it. It's available ncksports.com, also kdcountry94.com, and we'll continue to follow how the staff comes together as well under the new head coach, St. John's Tipton football, Dean Gingler. Any other local sports information?
There's some, obviously yesterday the baseball and softball regional brackets were released, and if you missed those, all that's posted as well at ncksports.com. Things will start Monday. The Beloit baseball team is at TMP Marion, 5 o'clock Monday evening, and then Lincoln Sylvan Lucas baseball team is at Minneapolis, 5 o'clock on Monday. Then regional softball. Beloit is hosting Minneapolis Monday at 5 o'clock. Lady Trojans are the number one seed there. And then Sylvan Lucas Lincoln at home against Larned at 5:30 on Monday evening in 3A softball. So, again, full brackets are at ncksports.com. As far as today's high school sports schedule is concerned, the Mid-Continent League track meet has been moved to tomorrow in Phillipsburg. So Smith Center will be from our area competing there. That's tomorrow at 3 o'clock in Phillipsburg instead of today. As far as we know, the Northern Plains League high school meet still on for today at 3 o'clock over in Mankato. The PTL junior high track meet, if you haven't heard already, has been moved to Monday at 10 o'clock. It was supposed to be this morning, but they've moved that again to Monday. So that's a look at what's going on as far as the local sports are concerned. Lincoln Sylvan Lucas baseball scheduled to play Canton Galva this afternoon in a doubleheader beginning at 4 o'clock. So that's what's going on locally here today. And again, as we mentioned, for all the latest in local sports, ncksports.com is where you need to go.
All right. Thank you very much, Dusty. And so now we move on to baseball, where the Kansas City Royals, we joked about it yesterday. If the Royals could just maybe save a few runs, now watch them after hitting 2 grand slams and scoring 12 runs against the Astros, probably score just one or two or get shut out. Hey, what do you know? The Royals got shut out right after they scored 12, 2 grand slams. Could they have just saved one of those grand slams? Guess it wouldn't have mattered. They did lose last night 9-0. And why? Well, they gave up too many home runs. Jorge Lopez, a short outing.
Ball hit high, deep right field. Owings back, looking up. Good home run! Michael Brantley, his 8th home run of the year. Astros in front, 4-0.
Astros 4-0, and then Martin Maldonado, the catcher, got ejected for arguing ball strikes when he was at the plate. Then Ned got ejected. The Royals were down 9-0 at that time. Then their argument was all the borderline calls seemed to go the Astros' way, which I saw a few of those, and I would say they probably had a beef, although that's not the reason that they were behind 9-0. And Ryan LaFever appropriately pointed that out in the broadcast. I know he has to be somewhat of a homer, but that was a fair comment that he made. And Ned Yost wasn't making excuses on why they lost. It's just that they won a fair shake. Huh, that sounds like James Harden. Anyway, the Royals do lose last night 9-0, so the boys in blue will go back at it here today. Actually, it'll be tomorrow. They get the day off. 7:15 tomorrow, interleague game against the Phillies. Are off to a nice start, 21-15. Bryce Harper and the Phillies come to KC. Phillies don't come to KC very often, If you want to see Bryce Harper, this would be a good time. Probably can get some affordable tickets. There's plenty of seats available, I believe. Royals are 13-25. Homer Bailey versus Jake Arrieta. Bailey, a guy that's thrown a perfect game and got a huge contract, and Jake Arrieta, who won the Cy Young Award a couple of years ago. Two guys that, well, aren't what they once were, but Arrieta's in better shape than Bailey, although Bailey has shown flashes. So the Royals in action against the Phillies tonight at 7:15. The NBA playoffs continuing last night, and man, oh man, did the Bucks just take it to the Celtics.
Hello, Eastern Conference Finals. The Bucks advance, beating the Boston Celtics in five, 4-1, winning four straight, and beating the Celtics for the second time in franchise history in a playoff series. 116-91 is the final, and now bring on the 76ers or the Raptors.
Bucks win the series in five. They lost the first game and then won the last four. It's their first conference final appearance since 2001, and probably just as big a news after the game, or during the game, I guess you could say. Kyrie Irving, remember he wanted to get out of the shadow of LeBron James? He wanted to go lead a team?
Yes.
He isn't very good at it. There'd been a problem with the Celtics all year long. You know, think about this for a second. Last year, the Celtics made it to the Eastern Conference Finals and had a chance to make it to the finals. They were up 3-2, weren't they, against the Cavs, if I remember right?
Yeah, I think so.
But it went 7, the Cavs won. Remember, Kyrie Irving didn't play. He was hurt.
Yes.
He didn't play in the playoffs. Celtics almost made the finals without Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving healthy to play this year, and they're bounced in 5 games in the second round, and they underachieved all year long and ended up being a 4 seed. So all year long, there's been talk, what's wrong with the Boston Celtics? Well, this article's pretty damning by Reed Forgrave of CBS Sports. He says, all along, we knew there was a problem with the Celtics. Now we know that Kyrie Irving wasn't just part of the problem. He was the problem. Listen to this. After the Celtics' embarrassing loss to the Bucks, game 4, Irving said some things that served only to add to those thoughts. And then, of course, actually, it should have been game 5. Game 4 and 5, he wasn't in the best of moods. Here are some of the comments of questions asked of Kyrie Irving on leaving the floor early before the game was over. His comment, the game was over. On his poor shooting, who cares? I think a lot of people care.
Mm-hmm.
On his 7-for-22 shooting night, he said, and I quote, I'm trying to do it all. For me, the 22 shots, I should have shot 30. I'm that great of a shooter. You weren't this series.
No.
Irving's even called himself a basketball genius, which maybe he is, but he ain't no leader. And he'll never be the best player for a championship team, according to this article from Reed Forgrave. He's not the premier player for a team that can win a title. He's not a leader. He's not what he thought he was. And, you know, Gordon Hayward wasn't the same player since he had that gruesome injury a couple years ago. Marcus Smart was hurt for a big chunk of the playoffs. Jason Tatum wasn't as good this year. But maybe part of that it has to do with Kyrie Irving, too. He's supposed to be the leader. Brad Stevens took responsibility as coach, saying, I didn't do a very good job. It's been one of my worst jobs as a coach. Well, one guy can ruin it for everybody. And maybe it's not fair that Kyrie Irving catches all the blame, but when the guy that you bring in, highly touted, who's won an NBA title, has a ring, and you give him quite a bit of money to be or to take on his contract, and you're thinking about signing him long term, he comes to Boston, and he's not the leader because he isn't used to being the leader. He was the Robin to LeBron's Batman. So maybe that's the role he needs to take. Maybe he needs to go to the Knicks and he is Durant's Robin. Kevin Durant goes to the Knicks, or Anthony Davis goes to the Knicks, or maybe they go to the Nets. There needs to be another superstar bigger than Kyrie Irving, which I don't even know if Kyrie Irving is a superstar. He's an all-star. And then Irving can team up with a guy that is the true superstar and he can be option two. Maybe that's the way Kyrie Irving needs to do it. You just wonder if Kyrie Irving didn't want out of Cleveland so badly with LeBron and stayed in Cleveland, and Kyrie and him got along, would we have Warriors at Cavs again and they'd still be on the team? And you think back to that trade. When the trade was made, a lot of people said that the Cavs didn't get a great haul for Irving. The Celtics had a pretty good deal. Others said, it's kind of a wash. I'd have to say right now, it's been, well, one, it was a bad, the Cavs got nothing out of it. It was bad for them.
Yeah.
Irving forced their hand. Although they didn't have to do it. He was still under contract. So Cleveland made a mistake there, I believe. But also, the Celtics didn't get what they thought they were getting. And it does not sound like Kyrie Irving's going to be back in Boston. He's a free agent. He can go wherever he wants. And I would be stunned if he's back in
Boston. Last night he had some kind of comment like, it just depends on where I go next.
Yeah, yeah, it's done.
I think they were asking about his future, you know, yeah. Wherever I go next.
He's not happy.
Well, that's not staying then if you're going.
No. He's not happy, and the Celtics aren't happy. And Terry Rozier came out with some comments that were, well, I tell you, the comments that Terry Rozier said were flat out damning of what took place this year for the Celtics. And I'll pull these up if I can find them. He went on to social media and he was not happy. He said, and I quote, "Because I've been dealing with some BS, I feel like we all still had that one goal. It wasn't easy on coach dealing with a lot of guys that want to be great trying to get theirs. It was tough dealing with all the talent we had. Different guys wanted to be in the limelight. Guys in the limelight, bleep like that. It's been a lot." Asked about the team hitting the reset button, he said, "Bleep, we've got no choice but to do that." Safe to say, Terry Rozier ready to get out of Boston as well. When asked about the Celtics having the right to match any offer for him this summer, he said, "No comment." Remember, he was awesome in the playoffs last year because he had to be the starting point guard. Kyrie Irving was hurt. Sometimes, you're better off addition by subtraction, and that's applied to Carmelo Anthony most of his career. And Kyrie Irving, you would have to say maybe that's true right now for the Celtics. I would be willing to bet you the Celtics will reset. They may bring back Rozier. They may not. I think Kyrie Irving is gone. Rozier might be back, which makes sense. They need a point guard. Mm-hmm. I think the Celtics will be better next year without Kyrie Irving. And they'll go further, and they'll reach more of their goals. But they wanted to get a star, and they thought they had it in Kyrie Irving. What the Celtics probably need to do is get Anthony Davis. Do whatever they got to do to get Anthony Davis, but they got to trade for him. Or they can convince Kawhi Leonard to come to Boston, which I doubt. I don't think he wants to be on the East Coast. But there are a lot of free agents out there that you can spend and throw a lot of money at this offseason. But I don't think Kyrie Irving is going to be with the Celtics anymore.
No. And you know, I think you got to build around the young guys like Tatum and
Jaylen Brown.
And Jaylen Brown, exactly. Yeah. And find a good, like, coachable players for Brad Stevens, because I mean, that's their strength,
right?
Is at the head coaching position. And if you can find coachable players that are stars in this league, maybe not superstars, but an all-star, if you can get one of those to come in, that's gonna, you know, be that guy that can take coaching, that can gel with the group, the young group that you have, I think that's how you're going to be better off in Boston than trying to go get another guy like Kyrie that's a veteran in the league. And obviously, there's some stuff there that he kind of had an ego anyway. That's why he left Cleveland. So,
you know, when you look at the Celtics and the Nuggets, it's an interesting comparison because the Nuggets and the Celtics have built within the draft.
Mm-hmm.
They've made really good draft picks. Danny Ainge is very good at trading down when he had the first overall pick and still got the guy he wanted in Jason Tatum. And the Sixers took Markelle Fultz, and of course that blew up in their face.
Yeah.
So Danny Ainge has been pretty smart on these moves. He got Jaylen Brown, I believe, in that draft too. Marcus Smart was a really good pick. He picked up a free agent. Al Horford is definitely a solid player. But I think he felt the pressure of, I got to get a superstar to get us over the hump, which I think we talked about. They do probably need a superstar to get over the hump, especially with LeBron in the Eastern Conference.
Mm-hmm.
So they, I think, thought, well, we take away Kyrie Irving. Well, that hurts the Cavs' chances, and we get Kyrie Irving. Well, what happened was Kyrie Irving got hurt in the playoffs, which might have been a good thing, and the Celtics had their chances last year to beat the Cavs, and LeBron is so great. He willed his team basically to that series win. And so now the Celtics, you think about it in hindsight, that they either got the wrong superstar or would they have been better off just not getting a superstar, that let Jason Tatum become that superstar, which maybe Kyrie Irving has helped stunt his growth. I don't know. Maybe it's just a sophomore slump. Guys figure you out on tape, possibly. You get high on your own accolades, which basically Jason Tatum did. I don't know. I think Al Horford's a pretty good leader from what I know. But I'm guessing Kyrie Irving was the guy that was a cancer in the locker room, according to many sources. But I look at the Nuggets. The Nuggets last year were I mean, they had a play-in game, in essence, final game of the season to make the playoffs. Didn't get there. They still had a good record last year. They just didn't quite get in the playoffs. You know, Nuggets got Paul Millsap a few years ago. Not a superstar. An all-star. Not a superstar. And they haven't been so – there's not as much pressure in Denver to win an NBA title as there is in Boston. The Celtics have the most NBA titles of all time, one more than the Lakers. So that makes it a little bit different. But you look at the two franchises, the Nuggets have not gone above and over in regards to trying to get a superstar at all costs, whereas the Lakers and the Celtics have tried, and it hasn't worked for the Celtics. And the Lakers, of course, got LeBron, and And then they tried to get Anthony Davis, and that kind of imploded their season, and there was all kinds of problems in their locker room as well, and part of it might have been LeBron, too.
No, without question.
You know, I don't think it was all LeBron, but I think part of it. So, and then Magic just bails on him, which was great leadership, which, you know, I think LeBron is miffed by that, and I would be, too, if I was him. You're the guy that convinced me to come here, and now you just bail, you jump ship and let it sink, it seems like. But when you go back to the Nuggets, they drafted Jamal Murray 7th overall. And some people thought that was too high. Jokic was a second-round steal. And then Millsap was a nice free agent that fits in perfectly, kind of like Al Horford for the for the Celtics. But then they've drafted guys like a Will Barton, and they've got a couple guys that are really good defensive players that fit what they do. And the Nuggets last year weren't a good defensive team, and Mike Malone said, listen, if we're going to make the playoffs and do anything, we got to buy in defensively. Nuggets are one of the best defensive teams this year, and that's why they're one win away from the Western Conference Finals. So it's interesting. You look at the Nuggets, they haven't, like, traded some key assets to get that superstar, whereas the Celtics did and the Lakers did, and it hasn't worked out.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the difference in how teams are being put together, too.
Toronto went and got their superstar for a one-year rental, which may pay off.
Yeah. And you know, Toronto felt like they needed that.
I agree they did.
That DeRozan wasn't going to take them where they needed to go.
And he wasn't.
And so... But it is interesting the different ways that these teams are put together, because the Lakers, they wanted their superstar, but then built with a bunch of old guys around them.
Which we didn't understand what they were doing.
And they were, like, putting together the all
Rajon Rondo, Lance
crazy
Stevenson.
Team is what it felt like. Lance Stevenson, Rondo, and then, well, they got Beasley.
JaVale McGee, Michael Beasley.
And it was just like, how are all these egos and characters going to gel together? I don't think it's going to work. And
Lonzo Ball, you haven't even factored in the ball equation.
And that was all part of it, too. And so he was already there, and it's just like, what's going on? But that's how they put it together, because they had their superstar. They needed other guys
that
they felt could win championships or at least get them to the playoffs, and then that blew up in their face, and it didn't work out the right way. But if you can build a team like the Celtics did before they traded for Kyrie, like they were starting to do.
Yes, they were on the path.
And then, you know, like the Nuggets did, and, you know, I would always use the Spurs as an example of how you build a team without having to go get a superstar.
Even the Warriors.
Yeah,
Until Durant, they won a championship without getting a superstar. They drafted.
And we've talked about that at length on this show that, you know, everybody hates the Warriors because all these all-stars that are on their team. Well, they drafted every one of them except for Durant.
Yeah, won a championship with those three before Durant.
Yeah, with Green and Thompson and Curry, the all-stars on the team. They were all...
Yeah.
And a lot of people, you know, I would say based on how he's turned out, a lot of people passed on Stephen Curry before the Warriors picked him.
That's right.
So, you know, and Klay Thompson was a late pick, too.
Draymond Green was a second-round pick.
Yeah. So it's like... You know, if you build those teams that way.
Yeah.
But then, again, the Warriors were a team that had just gotten beat, so they had to go get a superstar.
They didn't have to.
Well, they felt like they needed to come back and win the next year.
Right.
And I don't know if they would have another championship without KD. Maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't.
Right.
That's hypothetical. But they felt like they needed that guy to get them back over the hump to be able to win it the next year. And obviously that worked out for them. He was able to gel with it maybe a little bit better than some other superstars do when they go to other places. But yeah, I mean, you don't just go get a guy just to get a superstar.
You got to be the right chemistry.
Yeah.
Chemistry is important. And the Celtics don't have it. Lakers didn't have it. The Nuggets do have it. And the Warriors, you know, they had all kind of bad chemistry earlier in the year with Draymond Green and Durant getting into it and so forth and so on. They seem to have pretty good chemistry. And here's the thing, you know, it's interesting with the Celtics. Terry Rozier said that guys are out to get theirs, which I think alludes to Kyrie Irving and probably a few other players on the team. And we've seen this where some teams try to collect a whole bunch of, you know, superstars together. I remember the Lakers, Karl Malone, Gary Payton, Kobe, you know, and that didn't work out.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, that worked and won a championship and nearly two championships. And then, of course, the Heat won a couple championships, but not as many as they said they were going to win with Bosch, Wade, and James. But many times it doesn't work out when you try to collect these superstars. Now, it has worked out for the Golden State Warriors, but they have not collected superstars. They collected one superstar. That's Kevin Durant, which is a perfect segue into the next part here on the Sports Ticket, and that is the other game that took place last night. The Warriors win Game 5 against the Rockets 104-99. They blew a 20-point lead at home. Then Kevin Durant leaves the game with a calf strain. So all of a sudden, the Warriors, gee, what do they do without Kevin Durant? I don't know. They got a few other options.
Throws the ball away. Gordon's got lost at Looney. Back to Thompson. He goes inside and scores with a left hand on an ugly play with 4.1 to go. How did that happen?
Warriors win 104-99. They actually fell behind in the fourth quarter. But this goes back to what we were just talking about, is that in Boston, Kyrie Irving didn't fit, didn't have the right attitude, the negativity, not willing to give up his shots, okay? He wanted, I think he's selfish because he wants to prove that he can do something outside LeBron's shadow. Yeah. So he has alternative motive, and it's not good for the team. You know, LeBron, I can't speak of him and the Lakers because he didn't have a good team around him to start with. But you look at the Warriors, this is how it works. And Steph Curry should be given a ton of credit. A ton of credit. Because Steph Curry won a couple of MVP awards. The Warriors, they won NBA championship with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. Then, the very next year, they're up 3-1. And if Draymond Green doesn't get suspended in Game 5, I think we all believe the Warriors still would have won that series. Cavs came back and won. So then they decide, listen, we can go get Kevin Durant. It's possible. Draymond Green, Steph Curry said, listen, we will sacrifice our numbers, Klay Thompson as well. We'll sacrifice our numbers. It's about winning. We want KD on this team, and we don't want to go up against him against OKC and Westbrook because we almost lost to them. We were down, 3-2 in that series. So it takes guys like Steph Curry, Thompson, and Green to be unselfish and say, I'm about winning. And here's where I want to give Steph Curry so much credit, because he was the face of the organization, and he still is to an extent. But now he's got to share the limelight with Kevin Durant. Right, right. And he probably would be more so now than he was, or about the same, but still be more of a focal point of the league. But when you have another superstar in Kevin Durant, honestly, ever since Durant joins the Warriors, I've kind of felt like Steph Curry's become in the shadows a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think Curry knew that.
Oh, yeah.
When they went after Durant, to his credit. Now, it's one thing to say, yeah, I'm going to sacrifice this. I want Durant on the team. And then all of a sudden you get to playing again, like, wait a minute. I'm getting less shots. I'm not getting as many three-pointers. Remember, they were 73-9 the last year they didn't have Kevin Durant. Yeah. They were pretty good without Kevin Durant. Yeah. And like I said, they should have won against the Cavaliers. They didn't. So they said, listen, we've got an ace in the hole. We're going to Kevin Durant. We're going to win a championship. But it's just not like, hey, let's throw them together. And Steve Kerr, well, that's an easy coaching job. It wasn't. You had a lot of egos. There were clashes. There have been the last few years. And we saw it with Draymond Green and Kevin Durant. Where I'm going with this is, last night is a perfect example of why the Warriors are so good. And it's not because of Kevin Durant per se. You know, Durant's a terrific player. He's been fantastic in the playoffs. And he may not play game 6 or 7 against the Rockets with a right calf strain. He might be out for the rest of the series, which is ironic because what happened last year? Rockets were up 3-2. Chris Paul had the hamstring injury, which we predicted on the show the day before it happened, because he always gets hurt. And the Rockets lost game 6 and 7. If Paul had been healthy, I think a lot of people think the Rockets would have knocked off the Warriors. Well, now a year later, the Warriors are in the same situation without one of their stars. They might not have Durant for the next two games. They're up 3-2, got to go to Houston for game 6. So here's where I'm going. So Steph Curry last night was having a horrible game. He wasn't taking a ton of shots. The shots he was taking were bad. I mean, in regards to, he was way off. One, did he hit the rim? I saw him chuck. Mm-hmm. Durant was the guy. He was the go-to guy last night. Klay Thompson was red hot in the first half. Okay, so what happens when things fall apart? You blow a 20-point lead. Kevin Durant leaves. All the momentum is on Houston Rockets' side. All of a sudden, Steph Curry went into pre-Kevin Durant Steph Curry mode. He went back to MVP mode. He took over last night when they needed it the most. So here's the thing. Steph Curry, they asked him after the game, well, you know, how do you explain this or that? Steve Kerr said, listen, he just went into a different level, and he knew he had to with Kevin Durant out. It takes a lot of stress off of Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and Klay Thompson to have Kevin Durant be the go-to guy in clutch situations or to have multiple options. But when Kevin Durant left, that meant somebody had to step up, and Steph Curry said, yeah, I can do that. And I think Steph Curry could have done this all throughout the last couple of seasons with Durant.
Yeah.
And if he did, this team wouldn't be as successful, because Curry knows that Durant needs the ball in certain spots on the floor to be successful. Durant's also sacrificed. He sacrificed numbers so that Curry can get his shots, Thompson get his shots, Draymond Green gets his numbers. The only way it works, unlike the Lakers and unlike the Celtics especially, is that the stars on these teams find a way to make it work. It's all, you can talk all you want, but you got to walk the walk. And Steph Curry has done that. He has not complained. He's all about winning. He smiles. He's probably, honestly, probably lost a little bit of money in regards to endorsements and the limelight. It's funny because Terry Rozier said a lot of these guys are looking for their own limelight. Steph Curry still has a limelight, but it's not as bright as it once was, and he's okay with that. And that's why the Warriors work. That's why the Warriors may be on their way to their third straight NBA championship with Kevin Durant, but four out of five and five straight NBA final appearances, with the constant being Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, who were all drafted by the Warriors. They didn't go grab these guys. Durant's the guy they added to the mix. And he may leave after this season, and then we'll see how great Curry is again and see how great Thompson is, although he's a restricted free agent. It sounds like he'll come back. It's kind of interesting how that worked out. We in the same night, you see Kyrie Irving wanting to be the man that wants the limelight, and he couldn't handle the pressure, and it really basically was toxic for their team, according to all reports. And then you got the Warriors, where this could have been completely toxic. Durant comes in, and even though these guys recruit him, now I'm averaging 18 instead of 22. Now I'm not getting all-star appearances, or I'm not an all-star starter, or I'm not getting this endorsement, or I'm not getting as much love from the fans because Kevin Durant's the guy. You know, Curry's still the face of the franchise. Make no mistake about it. But it is different, and I commend Curry because he's put winning above selfishness. And that's something Kyrie Irving, I think he wants to win really bad too. But I think Irving wants to win in his way to prove that I can do it without LeBron. Whereas Curry, I already done it without Durant. Now I'm okay with doing it with Durant.
Yeah. No, I think part of that, the limelight that goes away a little bit from Steph is also the way Kevin Durant's played in the finals the last couple of years.
Sure, absolutely.
And the way Steph's played in the finals the last couple of years.
Yeah.
In the last two or three years, you know. And so KD is the guy that's really lifted them, not only during these seasons, but you really see it when it comes to crunch time.
Yeah.
That KD's the guy that's lifted them to these last two championships without question.
And that's the reason they got it.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that's part of the reason, too, that, like you said, he's still the face of the franchise, Steph is, but it goes away a little bit when you get a guy like Kevin Durant to come in and succeed and play the way he has. But, yeah, I mean, I've thought that about Steph ever since – you know, he started coming up, the Warriors started getting good, that he would be a good leader for that team once he got into it and was able to, well, he was dealing with a lot of ankle injuries early in his career. So once he got healthy and got away from that, you could see it coming, and now you just see the same things. I mean, he's still the spokesperson for the franchise. You know, if you want to know how the team's doing and what's going on inside the team, you talk to Steph. KD will tell you some stuff, but he's
KD will be surly. Draymond Green will be surly. Klay Thompson's more reserved, but Curry is not usually surly.
No, you want to know what's going on, Steph will tell you.
That's right.
And obviously Steve Kerr will too. But, you know, that's the one thing I've always respected about Curry is, like, he's going to tell you what's going on, and he's going to be straight with you. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, this team has that. Now, you know, if I had to rely on Klay Thompson to do what Steph Curry does, I don't think you can. You know, Klay's one of those – he's a great player.
Streaky,
he's a great shooter. He's streaky, though, man. Yeah. And you don't want the ball in his hands.
And I don't think Klay Thompson's an alpha dog.
Exactly.
If he was an alpha dog, then he would have probably done what Kyrie did and say, I want out of the shadows of these guys.
Yeah,
but it sounds like Klay Thompson wants the workout deal because he knows this is a great fit for me. And there's not as much pressure on me, and I'm okay with it. And I can make still a lot of money and win championships with a guy like Curry or Durant coming back.
Yeah.
And Klay Thompson's not stupid.
Yeah, exactly. And I would think Draymond's
not
stupid
selfish.
Either because Draymond's a guy that I don't know would fit with his personality with a lot of other teams.
I agree with that.
They've gotten so used to it that he can slide in and just be Draymond.
Right.
He goes somewhere else, he can't do that. So those are three guys that were drafted by the Warriors that need to stay with the Warriors if they want to continue to have success in the NBA the way that they have. They've got guys that have been through this, and Steph's the leader of that.
All right, so I got to ask you a question now. If Durant doesn't play game 6 or 7, if he's out for the next two games, which I think he's probably out for game 6 more than likely, which the Warriors are okay. They are up 3-2. That's why they had the win last night. They lose last night. I don't think they win the series, but they won last night. Do you think this is the hypothetical, which seems to be, I mean, you don't know how guys heal. A calf strain can linger, though. I can tell you that, especially the way Durant plays. He's just not a spot-up shooter and all that. He likes to drive it, stop and pop. If Durant doesn't play the rest of this series, do you think the Warriors win the series, still win the series?
I'm going to say yes.
I believe so, too. I think they'll lose game six but win game seven. I think Curry and Thompson and Green will step up, and I think the Warriors will still find a way to win the series. Now, the bigger and tougher question, if Durant isn't close to 100% or this injury lingers or if it keeps him out for an extended period of time, do you think the Warriors will still win an NBA title this year without a healthy Kevin Durant?
Man, I...
Now, see, I say no.
I think Milwaukee and Toronto could both beat him without Durant.
I agree. I agree with that. Charles Barkley says the Warriors
won't
win. I
think they'll make it. I think they'll beat either Denver or Portland.
I agree with that.
But I don't think they'll.
Barkley says, Charles Barkley, who's usually outspoken, as we know, which I like that about him most of the time, he says the Warriors won't win without Durant. Now, I haven't heard the whole audio. I don't know if he means this series or just the championship. But if he's talking the championship, which is the ultimate thing about winning for the Warriors, that's their only goal. They don't worry about how many games they win. It's about winning a title. I would agree that without Durant, But I'm not super confident about that because I've seen the Warriors with this same cast of characters win a championship without Durant. Now, the difference here, and I think this is where Barkley's probably going, is that the Warriors, one of the things that happens when you bring in a superstar and you keep your other stars is then you got basically league minimum guys on the bench and your bench isn't that great. The only guy they have the bench is Sean Livingston and Iguodala, which is Iguodala been starting? I don't know. But anyway, Iguodala used to be their sixth man. But if you take Durant out of the equation, now the bench is even shorter, and the bench hasn't been giving him hardly anything. And DeMarcus Cousins is out. I don't know if he'll be coming back anytime soon. It doesn't look like it. So Andrew Bogut and Kevin Looney are the two guys Looney, you rely on inside who aren't – Bogut's not what he once was, and they're not offensive threats. So much offensive pressure now shifts to – Thompson and Curry, and Green will have to step up offense a little bit too. Mm-hmm. He's kind of up and down. So when you think about, and then Durant, one of the underrated things about Kevin Durant is his defense. He has gotten so much better defensively, especially since he went to Golden State and towards the end with OKC. He knew that for his teams to make a championship run, he had to step it up on the defensive side, and we saw what he did, you know, against LeBron, working and wearing him out and making some great plays against him the last couple of years. That's where I think the Warriors are going to miss him maybe more than anything. That and, of course, taking that last shot, although Curry can do that. So I think Klay Thompson's got to become hot for them to win the NBA title. Thompson and Curry have to play really, really well. That seems to be obvious. But they also need somebody else to step up that you're not thinking about probably because you can't just rely on five guys and no bench. And that's about what they'll be without Kevin Durant, five guys and no bench. Whereas with Durant, they have one or two guys that come off the bench and provide a few minutes here and there. But they are a thin team. And that's probably one of the reasons why you would say they won't win a title without Durant compared to when they did win a title before Durant came. Does that make sense? They were a deeper team when won it without Durant.
I mean, Iguodala was the MVP of the finals.
Right.
And he was a sixth man. He was coming off the bench at that time. Obviously he was younger, too, and a little bit better physical shape than he is right now. That's the thing, too.
There's more wear on
the tires.
These
guys are getting more wear and tear. I mean, you play – four straight years in the finals.
You're playing over 100 games.
Exactly.
Four straight. And that's what LeBron, what was it, six straight years, eight years straight years? I mean, eventually it can catch up to you. They're all human.
Yeah.
You know? All right, so the Eastern Conference semifinals tonight, Raptors, Sixers, game six, Raptors' chance to close it out. Listen, I think this is simple. If Embiid is 100%, this series is going seven. If he's not, Raptors finish it tonight. And the Sixers have no answer for Kawhi Leonard. Nuggets, Trailblazers tonight. I don't know. Something tells me the Nuggets are going to finish this thing tonight. Something tells me the Nuggets, everybody thought the series was going to go the other way when Portland won that quadruple overtime game. And I think a lot of people thought, okay, Portland's just going to go on and win the series in five or six. I don't know, man. There's something special about this Nugget team. And I don't know, man. I think Denver's going to win the series. But I think they're going to finish it tonight.
I'll just be different and say Portland's going to win tonight. I don't really
have a gut feeling one way or the other. Another game seven in Denver. That'd be fun for the fans.
Yeah.
That'd be all right. And then tomorrow night, it's game six between the Warriors and Rockets, more than likely without Kevin Durant. Okay, I might gross people out, but I've always wondered about this. This sounds really weird. I have always wondered, I think I've seen it happen, when track and field, when people throw stuff, all right? Shot put, discus, javelin. I'm always worried about the people that are out there. Has anybody ever been struck by a shot put or I would hope not. A discus, maybe. Been struck by a javelin.
I've seen video
of a guy being struck by a javelin. Yeah. Okay, but here's a really, really weird story. You want me to gross you out? An athlete at the University of Georgia was rushed to the hospital this week after accidentally getting impaled by a javelin. So my first thought was he was a spectator, or he was just on the side watching, and it came and it struck him. That was my thinking. Oh, no. No. That's not what happened. Freshman Bulldog sprinter Elijah Godwin fell backwards onto a javelin that was planted into the ground. So it was, you know, put in the ground just to hold it. And he apparently fell backwards and right into the javelin at a Georgia track meet on Tuesday. The javelin struck Godwin just below his shoulder blade and left him with a punctured and collapsed lung. Upon arriving at the scene, rescue workers grinded off the part of the javelin that was sticking out of Goodwin's body. They say Godwin, and then later in the story say Goodwin, so I don't know what his last name really is. He was rushed to the hospital after the javelin pierced him. The freshman is expected to make a full recovery and remains in stable condition following surgery to remove the piece that was inside of him, which was part of the javelin. You talk about a freak injury.
Yeah.
You're talking with your buddies, you back up, and a javelin goes through your body.
I was like,
Who put that there?
It'd be weird.
Who was it?
I mean, you think about how long the javelin is.
Yeah, it had to be at a lower angle.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're going to put it at a lower angle so they can grab it.
Below the shoulder blade there? Like,
that's weird to
be. It would have been at an angle. It would have been like a 45-degree angle.
Yeah, and it's weird to be that low to be put into, man, it must have been some pretty hard ground. Because if it was that low, you would think it would just slide, you know, not go in.
Yeah, I know, you're right. it's a completely freak injury.
Just like the math of that doesn't add up to me. No. It's insane.
It's an incredibly freak injury, and just goes to show you can do everything you want in the world and still weird things can happen. So you just do the best you can to protect yourself in all facets of life. That's the Sports Ticket. Enjoy the rest of your day.